to Senior Power of Maine.
Hi, I'm Lynn McGregor.
And I'm David Neely. Thank you for joining us for a half an hour of Senior Power.
Hey, Lynn, do you know what most people on the Senior Power radio program have in common?
Sure, they're either seniors or they work with seniors.
Bingo. How'd you get that for a junior partner? That's good.
Excuse me, David. I'm a senior partner.
Oh, speaking of the senior partners, do you know that it's because of our senior partners that Maine has one of the highest volunteer rates in the nation and is considered very generous with its philanthropy, even though it's a relatively lower income state? And on top of that, are most involved in civic organizations. Indeed, it is our senior partners that allow towns and cities throughout the state of Maine to have that community feel.
And we need our seniors to stay in the game.
Our guest is Sheila Grant, who, in addition to other things, is the publisher of a couple books, and she's written for many publications. But one of the books is Design Downtown for Women, and, in parentheses, Men Will Follow. But as Sheila and I have once discussed, that when you design downtown for women, you design them for seniors, you make them more family-friendly. Sheila, welcome to Senior Power.
Thank you, David.
You know, you wrote this book, and I don't think you ever intended, or maybe you did, that you'd be invited to speak about this, and I'd like you to share a little bit of that story with us.
Well, first of all, it wasn't just me. There are a dozen other authors of this book, and I was asked to come on as a writer and also as the editor to align all of those chapters by various writers into one style and some kind of a cohesive order of information. So I was not the publisher, but I was an author and the editor of the book. And the way that came about was I was also the editor and writer of two newsletters covering downtown revitalization across the United States and Canada, and I got to know David Feehan during that time. And irony alert, it was actually David, a gentleman, who thought up the concept for this book and the title for the book. And he reached out to all of the various contributing authors to ask them if they would submit a chapter under their own specialties.
Well, yeah, I should have also mentioned, Sheila, that you, in addition to writing for Maine Seniors Magazine, which is the way I got to know of you, you also were an editor for Maine Seniors Magazine, and now you continue to write for Maine Seniors Magazine. But back to your book, Design Downtown for Women, am I right that you were asked to speak about this? In fact, I think you traveled across the country to do so.
I did. I was invited to speak to the Chicago Loop Alliance and 350 of their closest friends on Valentine's Day, 2019, I believe it was, about this topic. And it was a wonderful trip, and I learned so much about the Chicago Loop Alliance, and they seemed to enjoy the presentation. And it was quite the thing to be invited to go out there.
What are some of the tips that you've come up with over time as to how to best design downtowns?
Okay, well, as you noted earlier, making downtowns more comfortable for women would also make them more comfortable for everyone else, including Maine seniors. One of the big things that needs to be taken into consideration is that downtowns are designed at a male scale, and the average male in the United States is 6 inches taller than the average woman. And as women age, and some women from other nationalities are shorter than the United States average, that means that our eye levels vary greatly. So our wayfinding signage, our informational kiosks, parking pay stations, storefront information, all need to be at an eye level for everyone. In addition to that, seating needs to accommodate more sizes of people. And seating is important, especially for seniors, because they need a place to rest. You know, they can't walk quite as far sometimes. I mean, some can. We have very active seniors, but some can't. And that's also true of families with small children or someone who's recovering from an injury or a surgery or whatever. Seating downtown allows people to stay downtown comfortably for longer. seating needs to vary in height. One study of urban spaces in New York City found that one of the most popular places to sit was a long wall with a sloping walkway that created that variation of height in the wall. And that kind of everybody was drawn to that because they could accommodate their own body size. Well, so that's one thing.
That's an excellent point, actually, because even, I could go the other way and say that I know some folks that are very tall. And sometimes they find that seating isn't quite as comfortable for them based mm-hmm. on their height. So I can easily see how conversely it's very important to have variable seating.
Yes, it makes a big difference. Another thing that's very important for all of us is safe walking surfaces. Women are more likely to wear high heels, but they're also more likely to have balance issues as they age, as are all seniors. And anyone who's carrying a package can, fall because of uneven pavement or whatever. Small children almost never watch where their feet are going. So steps without railings, uneven pavement, visually indistinct edges on walking surfaces is a big one. These all increase the risk of a fall. One example, my late mother-in-law, several years ago, stepped off a curb in front of a new business and broke her hip.
Ooh.
The next day, that curb was painted a nice bright yellow, but because it was a new construction, they hadn't gotten around to that yet, and so she didn't notice the edge of the curb.
You know, speaking to those kinds of issues, again, that really, it's beneficial for everybody, and I can see where, especially with seniors, my co-host here, Lynn McGregor, she actually is a tall drink of water, and so I'm not sure some of the other things in terms of some of the visuals and some of the seating necessarily apply, but I know that you went over a wide array of considerations, and some of them really are, as you speak to the children, are the family-friendly issues as well.
Yes, and a lot of grandparents like to spend time with their grandchildren, and that would make it easier for that family configuration to enjoy downtown.
Wow.
Another big one that people get a little embarrassed about talking about, but this is huge, is public restrooms.
Oh, that is, that being a woman, that's huge. That's huge
it,
for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Women are way more likely to need to go more frequently themselves, although that can happen to anyone as we get older.
Yes.
They're also the ones that are usually caring for small children or, say, elderly parents who might need to go more often.
Absolutely. That's
so,
me.
Yeah. Having plenty of clean public restrooms is super important. And if downtowns don't have the funding to build out that infrastructure, there are ways to incentivize downtown businesses to offer that. Traverse City, Michigan offered a stipend funded with tax increment financing, for example, to offer facilities in various businesses that would sign up to be part of the program. The businesses were required to have extended hours of operation during the summer and to be ADA compliant. And the first year, businesses were cautious and there were only two takers, but both of them stayed in the program and others saw how successful it was. And the next year, lots of businesses wanted on board.
What are some of the other things? I don't know if you had a question and answer session when you were speaking out there, but my guess is some people have obviously asked you about other ideas and ways to design downtowns to be more friendly.
There really wasn't a big question session, although people did come up afterwards and comment. I had architects come up and tell me they were going to take the book into consideration when they designed spaces in downtown Chicago. Imagine that.
From Maine to downtown Chicago and influencing the way downtowns are designed, Sheila Grant, we thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you, Sheila.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
Now we're going deep into a bargain basement with Gary Crocker. Uncle Henry's, and from my perspective anyway, that's the old Craigslist. So whether it's Uncle Henry's or Craigslist, that they both are a virtual way of still attending flea markets and yard sales if people aren't as comfortable doing that or if it's in the middle of the winter. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I got to tell you, if people see them as a way to sell and buy and stuff, I see it as pure entertainment. You know, if whether it was the old magazine approach or whether it's on the interstate there, some people refer to it as the internet, but... Either way, I am always looking for a deal. And that's the thing with maintenance. And that's why these internet things will work for good, because maintenance don't, they want to buy stuff at a discount, and they don't really care what it is. You know, if they look at something that says this item was $45 yesterday, but today you can get it for 29 cents, they're going to buy it. Then say, what was that anyway, darling? You know, that there's nothing like a deal to draw a mana, and that's really what those things are all about. And they are entertainment. You know, figuring out what certain people are sick of using. And you know, my step machine and my exercise equipment at the house, it really, when I sell it now on Craigslist or on Uncle Henry's or wherever I want to sell it, or if I just push it out to the side of the dirt road I live on, I'm going to advertise it as a kind of an open-air hamper, a place to keep your clothes when you're not wearing it. Just hang them all over the damn thing, because it keeps everything aired out. So that multiple purposes. But the idea of Craigslist, Uncle Henry's, you name it, is just wheeling and dealing. In fact, Wes Gardner just came up with their own Wes Gardner proper, and it's just in town, and people are posting stuff every single day. You know, a one-eyed cat was last year. Sometimes it isn't stuff to buy and sell. Sometimes it's just, you know, my one-eyed cat was lost yesterday, and if anybody sees it, please bring it up. And then, you know, 2 days later, this is a true story. I wouldn't make this up. It wouldn't be kind. 2 days later, a fella come up. Well, it was a bad day on Bog Hill. I found that one-eyed cat, and we've held a ceremony for it. So, you know, all that stuff, you can communicate wicked through Uncle Henry's and all those other ways, electronic and otherwise, to make sure people are in touch with what they need and what they don't need, but what they want, because it's a bargain.
Our next guest, Tammy DeLong, has been advocating for seniors in Aroostook County for years, and she's been with the Senior Planning Center in the Presque Isle office. Tammy, tell us how you got involved in this business.
Well, I was doing most of it anyway at the Agency on Aging, and I just wanted to expand my horizons and grow a little bit and take on a new role. So I figured, you know, I'm pretty much doing almost everything I was doing at the agency here. I'm just able to help them a little bit more by physically setting up their plans for them and able to do the follow-up and really, really dig in my heels and help them.
And to my knowledge, that means that in many cases, you're reviewing the overall financial condition and potentially helping them with the Medicare savings program. Am I correct?
Yes, that's part of our whole, we usually do a whole person approach when they come in. We screen them for any state benefit they may be eligible for, any low-income subsidies. We help them, you know, maybe there's a med alternative they can talk to their doctor about. Maybe this plan's a little bit less expensive than this plan, or if you change pharmacies, you can save some money. It all pretty much winds up about the bottom line. How much can we save these people so they can get the care they need at the least amount of cost?
And it's so important that you had suggested that it's about the care they need at the least amount of
correct
cost. So you do look at things like the meds they're on, the other issues regarding their personal health care, and then you have a variety of options for them, because, of course, at the Senior Planning Center, they do represent all the major Medicare health plans. And you know from your work with the Area Agency on Aging that X amount of the people, I don't even know what that number is, but do qualify for the Medicare Savings Program. In fact, some that may already be on Medicaid can have additional help, combination of the Medicaid and Medicare package. In some cases, they may not be on the hook for much to any expense. Am I right?
Absolutely. A lot of those plans that work with the Medicare, the main care and things like that, will give them a lot of the vision, dental, hearing, transportation issues that they, you know, some of the main care stuff doesn't cover all of that anymore, and they still need it as they age in, as well as most of those people do. So that's why those plans and a lot of the benefits that we can give them are so important. And a lot of people come in here and don't even realize they qualify, or they all have the misinterpretation that if they get on the Medicare saving program, the state's going to come take their house when they pass away. So there's a lot of misconceptions out there that people have. So it's nice to have some place to go where they can get those cleared up, and we can help them sign the paperwork, get all the benefits they need.
Yeah, that's excellent. And of course, the other aspect of it is, I mean, Aroostook County was always known for its great work ethic. In fact, in the old days when we had a little business, Snow and Ely, we had an automatic hiring if the application came in from Aroostook County. These are folks in many cases that grew up working as children. They had great work ethics, great values, and so if you tell them they're entitled to something, they may not like that idea, yet if you tell them these are benefits you earned, which is the case when you pay into the system for most of your working days, then obviously they do deserve to have somebody like you sit down and help explain to them how they can have these benefits at a lower cost. I'm sure that you as well, though, do find, and I don't know what the percent is, and I'm not trying to pull it out of you, I just roughly, what percentage of the people that go into the Presque Isle office do need or are able to qualify for some kind of Medicare savings?
Yeah, it's probably a third or better that come through the door that automatically qualify, that they don't even know they do. And you're absolutely right about that. I always tell them, you know what, you worked your whole life. They'll say, well, somebody else could use them more. I said, well, you worked your whole life. Why don't you get some of that money back that you paid in? And as soon as you put it that way, they're like, oh, I never thought of it that way. So a lot of them we can pretty much, you know, suggest and help out, get through the process, and they're very happy at the end. I had a lady one time, she said her meds were like zero cost when she went to the pharmacy. She said she looked at the pharmacist, she looked at the bag, she looked at the pharmacist, she looked at the bag, she grabbed the bag and ran out of the door before they could charge her anything.
She didn't believe it.
She couldn't believe it. She's called me crying, and she goes, I can't believe it. I can afford my groceries this month and my meds. It's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, and that is great, because you really speak to the slogan of the Senior Planning Center, help when it matters most. And I thank you so much for being on with us today, Tammy.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Our next guest has a varied career. In fact, actually, he was a radio guy, had a radio career for some 30-plus years. And he has been involved in the Maine State Legislature. He has been involved in the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, Inland Fisheries and Wildlife Committee. Today, he serves on the Maine Board of Environmental Protection. And Bob Duchesne, our next guest, has a bird guiding company. And his company, Maine Birding Trail, and he knows more about birding in Maine than anybody I know. Bob, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here. And it makes me sound like I can't hold a job.
Oh, well, actually, after 3 decades in radio, you're, yeah. You've got to be close up there to George Hale with that time in.
Yep, there was a time when I thought I wanted to be the next George Hale, and then I decided that it couldn't be done better than he did it.
Well, now, tell me a little bit about this. You were inducted into the Country DJ Hall of Fame in Nashville?
Yes, I was. There's a number of rules. The judges, first of all, you have to be in the business at least 25 years, so the first rule is don't die young. But then you had to be in country music for at least a quarter century. You had to demonstrate rating success and industry leadership and a whole bunch of things, and apparently I got over the bar.
Well, in the Country Music Association had tapped you as America's Broadcast Personality of the Year. I mean, these are great accolades from your radio career.
Yep, I used to be somebody.
Well, now I guess what we could say is you're a birder. Is that a word?
Always, yeah, I always was. What got me started was in first grade when goldfinches, those bright yellow birds, would come out and sit on the lawn after the rain, and I was just fascinated by how something could be that yellow and sitting right out in front of my window, and that got me hooked at a very young age.
Oh, isn't that interesting? So, I mean, you probably were one of the first ones to realize that the nuthatch was an acrobat and really paid attention to some of the birds that maybe some of the rest of us sort of took for granted. Tell us a little bit more about what got you excited about birding, because you probably know as much about birding in Maine as anyone.
Yeah, it's funny. I grew up like most other northern New England kids, reading their herder's sporting catalog, looking at what rifles and shotguns and fishing rods and reels I wanted to buy when I got old enough. So I was always interested in the outdoors, but then this birding thing just sort of got me sidetracked to the point where it became an obsession. And it didn't become an obsession until much later in life. I was always interested throughout all the years of my life, really, from 6 years old and on. But then when I started the radio station in Bangor and had some time on my hands to work with the local chapter of Audubon, I really got hooked again and never looked back.
And you know, there are all kinds of interesting snippets, if you will, about different birds that most of us wouldn't regularly know. And I'm thinking, for instance, we're getting onto the coast a little bit to know that the puffins were something I always thought, you know, you might see off if you move further up the coast to Canada, and yet we have them right here in Maine.
Yeah, we have five different islands that have populations of puffins, and there's boat trips that go to at least four of them, and they're reasonably inexpensive for the quality of the trip you get out of it. So there's so many different options, and really, in this end of Maine, there's a bunch of different options that are worth taking.
What towns are they out of, the puffin trips? Are they like Portland? Are they, you know, Casco Bay, Penobscot Bay, all of them have it?
Right. There's five islands. Eastern Egg Rock is the southernmost, and there's about three boats that go out of the Booth Bay Harbor, New Harbor area. Three boats go over there.
Okay.
Matinicus Rock is the next one up, but that's a little far out, and no regular commercial boats go there. A few charter boats will do it. Seal Island is also about 9 to 12 miles out to sea. But the Isle of Ho Ferry takes a special trip over there every Sunday, and that's just a great trip. I love that one. Then there are about five boats that visit Petit Manan, which is in Steuben. Three of them go out of Bar Harbor. One of them goes out of Winter Harbor, and that's my favorite, Acadia Puffin Cruise. And then there's also Robertson Sea Tours that goes out of Millbridge. So five boats go over there periodically. And one boat from the U.S. goes over to the granddaddy of them all, which is Machias Seal Island. Andy Patterson goes out of Cutler and takes about an hour to cross out to the island, and that's the only one you can land on. You can stay inside blinds, and that's so popular that Andy's like already booked his entire season.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
Yeah, that's just really popular.
Bob, tell me this, as somebody who really doesn't know much about this, but I'll pretend that I do. There are these really large nests we see from time to time all over the state. And I heard these migratory birds basically just come up here. They, if you will, give birth to the baby birds, and then they head, by wintertime, they head so far south, I think most people wouldn't even consider an airplane ride that far south. You know who I'm talking about.
Yes. Yep, that is true. There's a lot of birds, we call them neotropical migrants, come up from where they winter in the south. And when I say south, things like bobolinks, which I think you might be familiar with, bobolinks go all the way down to the grasslands of Argentina. A lot of the hawks we see go down to Mexico and in the south, Central America. The Arctic tern that nests on some of the same islands with the puffins is the world's long-distance migrant. It'll do it 20,000 miles a year in migration. Goes all the way down to the tip of Antarctica and then comes back up again to nest on our islands up here.
That's
amazing. They do it because we have so much food and less competition for them. So a lot of birds do this.
But the osprey one that has long migration as well?
It can, yeah. There are some that... that are in southern U.S., anywhere where the water doesn't freeze, essentially they can be. But if you concentrate the entire North American population in one place, then there's just not enough food for them. So some of them, the ones that were raised up here originally, return every year just like regular migrants, and some down south don't migrate at all. But yeah, that's what they're doing. They're coming back up, and when you see those big nests in the power poles as you're going down I-95, those are the ospreys, and they were as far south over the winter as, let's say, Maryland and down to Florida.
We know that the chickadee, of course, is a Maine state bird, but when we talk about other birds that are in high population and are very visible to the average person who may just have a bird feeder outside their house, what would you name as, for instance, the top 3 to 10 or how many ever you wish to name off?
You know, we just so much take blue jays for granted. But somebody comes over here from Europe or South America and sees a bird that blue and crested and kind of not all that shy, they can get really excited about something we so much take for granted. The nuthatches in your yard, as you pointed out, they are just really bold. They will sort of sit almost on your shoulder waiting for you to fill a feeder. They just have no fear of humans really at all. So some of the birds right in our own backyard, we really just take for granted. But they're showing behaviors that are, I think, are fascinating. And I think with the pandemic we've just gone through and still going through, people have been noticing that more in their backyards and coming to realize that the birds know your backyard like you know your own living room. They're that comfortable being around it.
You know, the grosbeak's another colorful bird. You were speaking to the yellow finch. And am I right when I say this? Is it with all birds? They used to say that the males are actually the more colorful.
Yes, generally speaking, that's true. There are a few species where the females are the ones who need to attract a mate, but it's the males who are normally more colorful, and that is specifically for mating. You'll notice a mallard, you know, the common duck we see. They go bright green with their green heads, but as soon as they've mated and the nests are laid, they go immediately brown, so they're less conspicuous and harder for a raptor to catch.
Oh, I do.
And then when it's mating season, they come right back to a green head again. So, yeah, they need to lose some of that color in many cases just so they're less attractive. Active to predators, it's the color that helps them attract a mate.
We've had them in our swimming pool here for the last week and a half. They land in the pool. This is the third year in a row I've seen them there, and we've been in this house for years, and I'd never before seen them. And then they're in little puddles around fields and things like that around the house. I'd never noticed them before.
Yep, and that's another bird that gets used to people so easy. If they're not being actively hunted and people are just walking by them, over at that marsh in Bangor right next under the children's sliding hill, Essex Woods, people are feeding those ducks all the time, and the ducks come right up to you.
Oh, no kidding. I'm going to have to go over there. They let me get right up on them to take pictures in the pool because I didn't think anybody'd believe it. And then the cover's on, so it acts like a marsh right now because there's leaves and things in it. But they came back after the cover was off and chlorine was in and spent a couple of days, which shocked me that they'd be in a chlorinated pool.
Yep, birds can get used to you. I think about up in a lot of Canada geese go into Aroostook County in the fall. And, of course, the hunters are out in the fields hunting some of them. But they know where the ponds are in town where they can't be hunted. So they just gather in there, and you can walk right by them, and they don't flinch, even though earlier that morning we were shooting at them. So they know the safe places and they recognize them, and they are really pretty wise to how humans behave and who to trust and who not to.
We can't say that they have nothing but a bird brain, huh?
No. I think some of those birds are smarter than we are.
Bob, we thank you so much for being on with us today.
Yes, thank you very
much. It is my pleasure, and thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Senior Power.
My insurance kept going up and up and up and up.
I was getting a lot of mail about Medicare.
I could never have navigated through the loopholes.
Mainers across the state are finding help at Senior Planning Center, which represents all major Medicare health plans.
Senior Planning Center was a lifesaver.
Senior Planning Center did it all.
Gave me all my options and signed me up with what I needed within an hour.
Call 223-6565. 223-6565. Help when it matters most. SeniorPlanningCenter.com.